Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. And this is a very special opportunity here. My guest is Gary Stockdale. Welcome to the show, Gary. It's an honor, Jeff, to have you on the show.
Oh, vice versa.
Two-time Emmy nominated, and for TV and film composing. One of the cool things I saw in his bio was that he's one of the original members of the Brian Setzer Orchestra, but he also sang on with Adele on Skyfall. He's been known as a big session player, a session singer, but also he's a great guitar player, and he has a beautiful Taylor. I'm very jealous he has here today. But we have also too his producer Greg Prestipino.
Hello.
And also some of his band members, Grant Geisman, who's been here on the Flow Guitar. Great player. He needs no introduction. And Steve Deutsch on bass.
Yay, thank you.
We have a rare opportunity here because we have the whole creative team, and we can take a look at what I want to do on this show is take a look at Gary's album, Keep Letting Go, that's coming out soon, if I'm correct. It's not released yet, but it's coming.
Right.
And look at the whole process from the beginning, songwriting, conception, to execution, arranging, recording, and then finally the final product. And we have some clips of it to show. So I want to start out really quick. Just give a brief rundown of your career, because it's so big. But I just kind of give some high.
Well, I've been around long enough to know where all the bodies are buried. I started out playing, in bars and playing rock. I'm actually a keyboard player and a guitar player. I'm probably a better keyboard player than a guitar player, but I'm great guitar player adjacent, especially in this room. I started out as a lead guitar player when the Beatles came out, and then picked piano back up, and then became a professional musician and singer. So I've spent my time playing and singing on films and TV, and also scoring. I used to ghostwrite for Lalo Schifrin, and then I became a film and TV composer in my own right. I did Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I did a lot of music with Penn & Teller. Since 1990, I've been Penn & Teller's composer, and we did a TV show in 1999. Well, a show in 1990 called Don't Try This at Home, which was an NBC special, which we recorded in New York.
I remember that.
And then I did a bunch of other stuff with it, including a New York Broadway run of theirs, and also a couple of British television specials and the American television specials. And then we did a show called Penn & Teller's Sin City Spectacular, which was a live variety show with a live band and live singers and dancers. And it was like, you know, the Ed Sullivan Show, where you'd have, you know, our philosophy was it's all one showbiz, you know, lap dancer, ballet dancer, it's all showbiz. So that was incredible. And one of the songs we did with Jennifer Holliday sang got nominated for an Emmy. And then I did their show. I'm going to try to clean it up for a broadcast. The Penn & Teller BS. or Penn and Teller bullshit. You can bleep that out.
Good
later.
Cleanup job.
Yeah, right. But Penn and Teller have been amazing, and they have such a great musical sensibility themselves that they've always allowed me to do the craziest stuff. And, so I still get hired on films. I sang on the Star Wars movie, the Rogue Nation, and Rogue One, rather, and the Star Trek movie. And then I'm scoring a short film for a TV producer, Claudia Lanau, right now. So I kind of try to stay a moving target in this business, which means whatever they pay me for, I'll basically do.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you play keyboards and guitar, so I presume for a lot of the film scoring, you're keyboard based when you write. And then it's interesting if you're on songwriting. From what I've heard of some of the songs, it sounds like you're writing those on guitar.
Well, yes. I mean, I always write my own songs on guitar or keyboard. It kind of depends on the song, depending on what comes out. You know, I consider myself a more facile soloist, possibly on piano. But my knowledge on guitar allows me to, my lack of knowledge on guitar allows me to take some chances and do some things that are a little surprising, because I go, how can I do that? I know how the chord should go, and then I find a way to voice it, and it's turned out pretty good so far. And, I'm constantly in awe of players like Grant, though, and, I always call him Grantu, because I met Grant working for Kazumatsu. He used to arrange for a ton of jazz, Japanese jazz records, and Kazumatsu would say, Grantu, I want track to sound like mountain. Mountain in distance.
Well, let's go through the process a little bit here. How did you meet Greg, and describe a little bit how you put this project together?
Well, we were robbing a bank. No, drug deal? What was it? No.
No, it was a SAG singer's meeting.
No, I know what it was. Were the jokes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I do. So this was like been going on for a year now.
He doesn't think you're funny either.
Yeah.
Either is the operative word.
I think Gary's funny.
That was Lori Reamer, who's actually producing my CD release show on November 17th and just doesn't like anything funny I ever say.
I do. I like some things, but not the things you want me to. Think are
oh,
funny.
There you go. This is my curse. What was I talking about? Oh, Greg. Greg and I are also, he's a great singer, and we are both SAG singers, so Screen Actors Guild, and we were at a SAG meeting and realizing that of all the kind of pious singers in the singing community, Greg and I were the two heretics. So we naturally gravitated towards each other, and we've been friends ever since. We wrote a number of different things together for different TV projects. We've sung together. Are we losing something?
No. He was adjusting his phones.
Oh, good.
Keep going. No.
The he being Steve Deutsch, crack bass player, professional, great, legendary bass player who's also here to play with us.
I hear a woman speaking in my phones. That's why.
That's Lori.
No, I'm not speaking. No. Never mind. Sorry.
This is all right. This is live radio, so
we do a few paranormal shows in this.
There's just another frequency that Steve is on, so we just have to know that all the time.
But anyway, getting back, so I didn't know that. So SAG actually, if you're a vocalist on a
film or TV show,
that's
either
on
SAG,
camera or off camera.
No, off camera. But SAG or AFTRA, and now that SAG and AFTRA are the same thing, it's all one. But that's how we get residuals. Like when I've got residuals coming in for films I've sung back in '82 or stuff like that.
Right. No, it's not through the musicians union.
No, you can.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I was looking. You sang on Avatar. You were one of the vocalists on Avatar too. So that's a SAG gig.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
There you go. Well, let me. Let's stop for a second and let me play a pretty interesting clip from the album. And this is called Demon Haunted World. And then we'll get a little more into the process. But I want to kind of give a little bit of... This is kind of an interesting thing because there's a lot of layers of guitars in it. And there's some effects that you're doing. And Greg can explain what he did to it. But it'll kind of give a feel. This album has a lot of different songs. It goes a lot of different places, which I think is kind of cool in that sense. It's not pigeonholed into one
thing.
I'll
speak about that a little later. There's one little setup for this song that I would want to give you. It's a tribute to Carl Sagan, who wrote a book called Demon
Haunted World. All right, let's play the clip.
In a demon haunted world.
So anyway, there's so much going on. They're very cool. I really like the arrangement, and there's some really interesting things in there. And I want to break that down a little bit. But before I do that, what was the concept going into this whole project? What were you trying to do?
Oh, the whole project, the whole album. I just do want to mention on that song, I wrote that song. It's the only song I co-wrote on the album. It was with Penn Jillette.
Oh, wow.
And so that song was written with Penn. I have two people that I really love and are some of the greatest guitar players in this town, Ed Tree and Allie Handel. I don't know if you know Allie.
I've had her on the show.
She's a dear friend. And they both heard the songs that I was planning to put on this album. They said, how are you going to put all this on one album? Because they're used to having one album that like has one mood throughout it, but I've never done that. So, you know, I basically write whatever song comes out. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's jazzy, sometimes it's R&B-like, sometimes it's folky, sometimes it's country. And I guess I come from that era of the Beatles where, you know, every song that they did was something different. It had some new concept. It used some instrument that the last song hasn't used. And so that's kind of my favorite thing in the world. I don't like to stick in one stylistic thing. So as I was performing these songs around since about 2011, 2012 is when I started writing the songs up here, and so I perform a lot around town. So I began to accumulate a number of songs. We had about 20 that we were producing, and we wound up with 14 on this album. I've got almost the makings of a whole nother album that has a lovely song that Grant plays on the next one that we're doing, which I'll probably try and get out after the first of the year. But this has been a major undertaking. 14 songs, when people are basically just releasing one song here and there. It's a little bit of a throwback in that sense, but...
Yeah, but I
go ahead.
Jump in.
Yeah.
I love albums. I mean, this whole thing about the album being dead is... You know, for me, ludicrous. And I love the eclecticism. The only thing that became really difficult was mastering the record to make it. The intent for me, and this is why I worked with a friend of mine, Chaz Ferry, to master it, because I knew I was going to be going back there a bunch of times. I knew it wasn't going to be a one pass, you know, where the guy does whatever he does on the top end and does whatever he does on the bottom end and pumps it up and compresses the piss out of it, you know. And I knew that it was going to be more difficult than that to have it flow.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it really does now. It's amazing.
I'm thinking, especially that cut, that's not an easy thing to mix because there's a lot of stuff going on in
it. Right.
There.
I spent a lot of time.
That had to be that's a difficult song. I mean, in terms of mixing it, because you have some really cool things. I hear all, you know, you get the acoustic guitar, which I assume is that guitar.
Yes.
The Taylor. He has a Taylor 6. What's the model?
Oh, it's a 514. 514C.
So it's a cedar top with a mahogany, which is a beautiful sounding guitar, and you'll hear it in the second live. But the. You flanged his, or there's a phasing on the guitar.
I don't remember what it was either a chorus. It was some kind of chorus.
No, well, that's the acoustic guitar. We put a little bit of synth with it at the same time to give it a little bit of a chorus feel. So we didn't want to put an electric guitar with it. We wanted to keep the acoustic feel.
Separate. But so I used some chorusing on it.
Oh,
stereo
I'm sure you did.
Chorus.
You can hear it. You can hear it phase. You can hear it phase. But what else was going on in there? There was some other guitars in there.
Well, Mark Goldenberg's all over the place, just doing what he wanted to do, which was kind of difficult because we had to sort through an enormous number of takes. With Mark, you just sort of open the gate and let him run. You know? And, you know, it makes more work for Mother later on, but it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a different way of working. And this one, for me, I mean, I just felt one of the fun things about doing this record was getting to use all the different people. Yeah, I wasn't there for some of the basic tracks.
Well, Greg came on the project a little later. I was looking for a producer. I knew what I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I recorded the basic tracks for most of the album, although there's some that aren't with them. But I recorded them with Steve and with M.B. Gordy. Mm-hmm. So we did bass and drums, and I had all the acoustic guitars, and I had all the keyboards on it already.
The basic instruments to track with.
And a rough vocal. Yeah. And then I kept looking, and I talked to a number of people, and there was nobody who really got it except for my friend Greg. I mean, Greg is an amazing producer with a huge, long history. He produced many, many albums. He worked with Andrew Gold. He did the vocals on Midnight at the Oasis.
Background
with Maria Muldaur. Well, not the lead vocals.
No, obviously not.
You would have been a lot cuter than I remember you.
Hey, wait a minute.
And he also wrote Break of My Stride with Matthew Wilder. So he's a hit songwriter as well. So he's slumming when he works with me. But he was the right guy. And we would argue and enjoy, and it's always about the music for Greg, and it's such a joy to work with him. He's a genius.
Yeah. So you had already pretty much the basic part of the album was done, and then you brought him in, and he was helping you finish the arrangements or finish and mix it?
Well, I had a pretty good idea of how I wanted to arrange everything. Like one of the tunes, we have a string quartet on it that there's no other instruments that come in until after the first chorus. So in that sense, I knew what I wanted, but my recording, you know, we've all had to become recording engineers, us who were composers, because, you know, as the money for the projects go less and less, you have to do your own engineering. So my engineering is good for TV and film, but not for records. And Greg knows how to get the right sounds out of the right instruments. He knows where the drums need to sit. You know, I don't know that stuff. So I needed someone who had the creative genius of Greg, but also the ability to know how to what frequency level was going to interfere with the vocals. And I wanted, my first CD I was very happy with, but I never felt that vocals were really the star. And in this case, we really wanted to make sure that the vocals became the focal point. The vocal focal.
Focal focal.
Thank you.
Focal.
Now, let me turn it to you, Greg. So coming into the project, how did you assess what needed to be done at that point?
Well, it was there were so many different styles going on that, and it took a long time to make this record because, I mean, it had to settle in. I don't know how you explain this kind of thing. I mean, I work intuitively, and when we started talking about who should play on it, what should it be, what direction should it go in. That's when it always gets really interesting. Like, who are you going to hire to sing harmonies, or who, you know, if it's Gary's, for instance, not right, which in almost every case you did them, except one song, I think.
Well, you kept saying, I kept saying, I want to bring in another vocalist, and you kept saying, no, the background sounds fine.
Did. The one, he would sing them, and he people, even on Just Be Cool, people go, is there a girl in there singing? I mean, is it just, you know?
Just me with tight pants.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because a lot of times, but also too, when coming into the project, like you said, it's pretty diverse. And I'm going to play a couple other clips that'll show there. Though I'm playing some of the guitar clips, you can hear the difference in the styles. But the thing is, usually the producer is like in is functions like in the old days, the artist and repertoire guy, where you put it together. And now you're coming into this project with all these different songs of all these different styles. So that must have been kind of like, wow.
Well, there was a lot of putting together. I mean, the mixing took a long time, and then we would decide that, no, we want to redo something, or, you know, there was a, it was a lot of work.
Greg's taste was always right on. We had arguments, and we, you know, there were some times when I would get my way, and he'd say, yeah, you were right, and there were some times when he would get his way, and I knew he was right, and, you know, that's kind of the way we worked. It was kind of a joy. That's all I can really say about it. It was, you know, we spent a lot of time hashing it out and making sure that it was right, and his concept is all over it, and yet he was so open and never went, oh, I think it should be this way.
Well, you have to keep reminding yourself that it's, you know, not your record, it's his record.
Well,
and I do, but it's hard because you get so deeply inside of it in order to do, I think, a really good job. And so sometimes, I mean, I'm going to be the first one to admit, I mean, even my mother thought I was a pain in the ass.
Frankie?
So.
Well, and also, too, you're both vocalists, so you're sensitive to what, you know, bringing that vocal up. That's a lot of guys are not. A lot of producers are instrument arrangers.
Right? And finding the
EQ and there is a difference.
And placement for each different song so that it made sense. And you do have to think about Beatles records when you do that. I mean, nothing ever sounded the same from song to song to song. You listen to Revolver, listen to Sgt. Pepper's, you right. know, they would do whatever
well,
felt
it's because,
right.
Well, it's because they had a comedy and film guy who was not necessarily film guy, but George Martin
yeah.
understood. I mean, he was the guy who did the music for the, you know, recorded the Goon Show and did all this.
Right.
So he knew how
had
to make wacky
sense.
Stuff happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he got Lennon's sense of humor.
Yeah.
Or actually the Beatles' sense of humor, because there's a sense of humor in all of their stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, that which is true. Let me play another clip. These are quick ones. And I just want to show a little bit of the diversity of the album. I'm going to play a clip, real quick clip of I Still Love You.
Oh,
it's
great.
The lead guitars. So I want to, and this is some great stuff. This is really, I think you guys will like this. Okay, this is I Still Love You. So very cool. I like the way it works.
Who were the girls singing on that one?
that was all me. But I have to tell you who did the. I did the solo part that went da da da. I did the melodic solo,
right.
And in between were these amazing. Ed Tree did the. Since this was a keyboard song, I didn't play acoustic guitar on this. Ed Tree played acoustic and he played those great interjection solos. That were awesome, and I don't know if you know Ed, but he's a fixture in Los Angeles. He's an amazing guitar player, and not only that, he's an amazing producer of many different artists
mm-hmm.
around
yeah.
Los Angeles, including you know, some of the finest people.
Well, it's a great sound. What were you using on that?
Well, I was probably using my Jazzmaster. I have an old pre-CBS Jazzmaster I bought in a pawn shop for $200 in 1967 in Glendale.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used that, and then I used one of the plug-ins, probably, you know, either guitar rig.
Well, I used plug-ins up the yin-yang.
Yeah, and he probably did more
guitars.
To it. And then Ed did whatever he did, probably through an amp. And
it sounded like an amp for what he was doing.
That's
but his
exactly
tone
right.
is to die. That's
yes.
a great sound.
Oh, he's an amazing guy.
That's a great... You have to ask him for me what guitar he used.
Absolutely will.
Sounds like a Tele, but I'm not sure.
Hopefully he'll be one of the guests at the CD release, right?
I hope so.
Yeah,
yeah, I would
so
love to have him come
meet.
Up and play that, yeah.
Now, I'm going to play another clip real quick, and then we're going to talk a little more about the song. Again, totally different feel, and it has one of our friends that's been on the show before, Dave Perlman. This is Ride Into the Sunset.
Dave.
So let me play a little clip of that. It's a verse, but you can hear him doing these fills on the pedal stand. It's beautiful stuff. This is really
yeah,
nice.
He killed it.
Yes, here's Ride Into
Always.
The Sunset.
Always.
Wanna ride into the sunset. No worries at all. Ride into the sunset. Gonna ride till I fall. I'm going far beyond the horizon, where no one disagrees, and no one ever has to get down on their knees. Sometimes you win, sometimes you
lose. And for Dave Perlman.
Yeah.
Actually, when Dave was on, he played. We played one of the.
That's what I heard.
It was this
yes.
One.
Yes.
I can't remember if it was this one.
Yeah, it might have, because that. This when I played this, I'm like, this sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember where I heard this, but it was yes.
It's on your own show.
And the mandolin is Tom Corbett.
Tom Corbett.
Yeah.
On mandolin.
Yeah, I think we had him play like 12 mandolin parts. I can't remember.
Yeah, he's a great, great player. Well, that was the thing. Being in L.A. and working in the film biz and working in the music biz, I know so many great musicians. That's somebody trying to reach Lori. It's not you? It's Greg?
No,
it's mine.
Oh, okay. Jeff's a very popular
guy. But it says no caller ID, so that means...
It's a sales call.
Yes,
yeah,
it's a sales call.
I get too many of those. But yeah, Tom Corbett on mandolin, and he's a local guy who's unbelievable.
But I think from playing those two different clips, you can just see how where you guys go all over the place in terms of styles, but it has a cohesiveness to it. Probably your voice, per se, is what keeps it all together.
Oh, good.
At least to me, and though the mix of it and the general sound of the album is consistent, even though they're different. I don't know how to describe that. The best way I can think of is to use an example is like Alan Parsons. He can do a lot of different things, but it's the same kind of general sonic landscape. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Interesting. So. Well, in this one, I think we both went, okay, we want Perlman. What songs is going to be good on it? And so we kind of knew which ones we would use him on.
Yeah, and it's great. And he just
great.
Fills the he answers you just beautifully.
It's like a string section. It's he just comes in with an orchestra. That's
yeah.
what he does.
And it's mono.
Is it? Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah,
it has
yeah.
to be.
Now, since we got everybody in the thing, let's take a look. Let's have you guys play something live.
Oh, good.
And that way we can also take a look at...
Probably.
A, what I wanted to talk about, too, yeah. is in your this in playing this album live, obviously there's a lot of layers, and I'm sure Demon Haunted World, unless you can get like 50 guys on stage, you're going to have to adjust your arrangements. I think it's a good this having everybody here play shows us how you approach it live. And let's go ahead and play something, and then let's talk a little bit about how you approach the live performance, because obviously you can't do all the parts.
Yes, and the majority of gigs I do around town, because most of them don't pay enough for you to bring a whole band, I bring in Grant and Steve, or sometimes Grant and Steve and Scott Bredman on percussion or
MB. He's so great. Yeah.
Well, Grant's an orchestra in himself.
Yes, he is.
That's a given. So,
all right, let's do You Don't Know. Just one little intro on this. The great thing about this song is the people that this song is about don't think it's about them. You say you found all the answers, solutions for the human plight. You say it's been right under our noses, wisdom hidden in plain sight. But you don't know, no, you don't know. Don't say true, it's just suppose. The fact that someone thought it up doesn't make it so.
rising up stronger than the tide, exploding just like a volcano. Helpless villagers step aside. You found the cure, you feel secure, but I prefer much more uncertainty, 'cause you don't know. You don't know, although we've seen this all before. We've dealt by coming back for else is blind. You swim in deep reverberation, the echo chamber of your mind. To you, it's all in black and white. They are wrong and you are right. If we could only see the light, how perfect things would be. But you don't know. No, you don't know. Don't say it true. You don't know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great sound. Great sound.
Thank you. Well, you know, that's a full-on thank you. Oh, Grant Geisman on lead guitar there. That's a full-on rocker on the album, as you heard, and that was a great solo on the record by James Hara. And
James played pretty much all the guitars.
On that one?
Yeah, I played a little guitar.
I played the acoustic.
Yeah. Well, okay.
There you go. I did something on it. I had some function on it. But so this is how we play it stripped down. And I think Grant pulls everything in between that and the rhythm.
Yeah, and we don't even have we don't have any drums in, and it's pretty full.
Yeah.
It's pretty full in there.
Well, you get good musicians around, you make me sound like I actually know what I'm doing.
Now, there's something interesting I was noticing here, and that was with Steve here, is he was alternating from fingers and pick.
There's a lot of eighth notes in here. And wanting the groove to pump, and we had a little problem working with headphones. I thought it needed it on the eighth notes, and on the verses, not so much.
I think that's called plingers, isn't it?
Do me a favor and just play a little bit of the riff, and then go from fingers, because you get a really consistent sound when you're playing.
The verse was... going to... kind of Trevor Boulder from Bowie. I would say.
But it worked nice really reference. Good. And with the other two guitars playing together, the riff, that little riff that you play.
Thank you.
It worked really, it's solid. It's just really solid, but quite full. Great lead.
Thanks. Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely. Always great
lead. Now, I just have to mention, he's using an Epiphone, which I've usually seen you with Gibsons, but this is, well, it is a Gibson, but...
It's essentially a Gibson made pretty much in the same factory. This is a 66 Epiphone Riviera that I got from my buddy Norm at Norm's Rare Guitars.
Yay.
And
it's a great guitar. I've been playing this one a lot. It just feels really nice.
It sounds great, and he's just using my little Marshall on there. Right? But your Taylor too is just a killer.
Oh, thanks, man.
So,
Grant is a mutant. You put a chart in front of him, he plays everything. He plays every style. and equally well. And,
no, I have to admit, I saw him at Lonnie's last amp show, and we were over at LSL Guitars, and Carl Verheyen was there, and Lance had made this guitar for Carl, and Carl brought him over. Like, he got to check this guitar out, and it was a Tele with a P90 in the neck and then the regular Tele. And he handed it to Grant, and it just it, you made it sing, man. It was just it was.
Thank you for that. And Carl Verheyen's no slouch either.
No,
buddy,
no,
Carl,
no,
so
no. But I mean,
Carl.
He's
thank
like
you for
he,
that.
He
yeah.
was like, you got to check this out, this guitar, and it was great.
Well, that's the great thing about living in L.A. When I was doing film and TV, you know, I call up, you know, James Hare. I call up Grant Geisman. I call up Carl Verheyen. You know, it's like it's an embarrassment of riches.
Well, let's try. Let's do another song. I think this sounded. This is kind of interesting.
Oh,
let's explore a little bit more of this. I have more clips, and we're going to play more of, from the album. But if there's something here that we have from the album, just as long as it's not Be Cool, because I'm going to take us out with Be Cool.
It's up to you. If you want to play something off the album,
unless you guys want to do it, you guys were rehearsing
we'll
with the Beatles stuff.
We'll do another two.
The Beatles stuff is cool too. I mean,
you can do a Beatles song.
Twist my arm. It's okay. Do the Beatles.
You want to do a Beatles song?
It's up to you. Yeah,
sure. Why not?
I'm always down for
all
a
right,
Beatles.
So I've just seen the face. So.
Okay.
Guess the audience gets to sing along now.
Please, yes.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just the girl for me. I want all the world to see we met. Die. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way and I'd have never been aware. As it is, I'll dream of her tonight. Die. Falling, yes, I'm falling. And she keeps calling. I have never known the likes of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. But other girls were never quite like this. Falling, yes, I'm falling. And she keeps calling me back again. Oh, Grant.
Another verse.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just the girl for me. I want all the world to see we've met. Die. Falling, yes, I'm falling. And she keeps calling me back again. Oh, I'm falling, yes, I'm falling. And she keeps calling.
Is that fun? I mean, that is so great. You can just play Beatles songs all night.
You know what? There are actually bands that do nothing but that.
What?
Yes. My friend Dale LaDuke has the B-Tunes, right. And then there's the Fab Four.
Yes, I know, Gary. I was
the Fab Four.
No, I know
the
that.
I was being
facetious. Oh, with Will Lee.
With Will, yeah.
Yeah.
I was using
it.
Just,
you know, it makes you smile. I don't. It's just happy. It's
there
great.
Are people I know who are contrarians and say they don't like the Beatles.
I don't trust those people.
They're not our kind of
now,
people.
Now, when you guys, now performing the songs live from the album and stuff, are you pretty much open? Do you change the arrangements a lot, or are you trying to stay more towards what the general feel of the album? How do you approach playing live?
Well, it's interesting. I don't really tell Grant, you know, we'll play like Hera did or something like that. I might do a little more of that when we do the live concert because we're trying to do the record. But then again, usually Grant comes up with something more amazing. So, you know, I'm always open. I'm always open to having other musicians and, you know.
Well, that's what's great about Gary, because he's very versatile and he's such a great singer and just such a great intuitive musician that...
Thank you.
Of course, there's a form, but if you decide to go somewhere, he can do it. You know,
yeah,
it's great.
Well, it's interesting because in general, from the past, since we were talking about earlier groups, group, a lot of British groups were more rehearsed. They tended to play exactly the same thing, especially...
Well, I think the record companies used to tell them that. I mean, they...
But, yeah. Like, the American groups, when you would see, like, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and so they just kind of did whatever they wanted to do.
Right, no, you're right.
And each... Which was interesting in one way, because each performance became a unique thing. So when people would, back in the day, when there were bootlegs, or when you're hearing, like, the re-releases of the live stuff...
Right.
Totally different performances.
Well, has Dylan ever played one of his songs the same way twice? I don't think he ever has.
But I mean, I think that's kind of an American thing where he just kind of...
Could be, yeah.
I noticed that a lot. When we'd see groups, now I was more into Prague, so when I saw like Genesis and Yes, everything was like exactly like the record.
Yeah.
Everything was just boom, 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 boom. And
people expected that too.
Yeah, but even some of the other progressive American bands, they were more free-formed about it.
Well, I think a lot of that was the drugs with Crosby, Stills.
But
not their harmonies, though. Their harmonies were pretty set, tight,
that's
and
true.
Set.
Yes, that's true.
So,
no,
it was more
true.
About Stills. You know, he had such great facility. He's very underrated.
One of the
think,
best the guitar players of the era.
The stuff
era
he played on the first time. Couple Crosby, Stills, and Nash albums.
Oh, yeah. No, he was a major influence for me.
You know, and that way he could get out there and improvise. So and the songs would have the same structure, and the harmonies, vocal harmonies would be the same, but he could just
My feeling is that, like, you listen to the Doors, you're going, okay, that's 1960s. You listen to Buffalo Springfield, and if you didn't know them, you'd think you were an alt-rock group.
Yeah.
They're just, they sound so new, so fresh. There's not a hackneyed idea in it, even to this day.
That's true.
Yeah. No, they were amazing. For just three albums, how much they influenced everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
No, that's true. And what you said about Stills, he was amazing, an amazing player, perfectionist too.
Well, did you read Graham Nash's autobiography?
No, I hadn't read it.
I recommend it highly because he was the only non-crazy person in the band.
He did a
wonderful telling of the great people that he was with, because he, you know, even played himself down a little bit. That still was the real genius of the band, and he was with Joni Mitchell. He said they all thought they were great songwriters, and Joni comes in and they go, okay, we don't know anything, you know. So he really appreciated all the moments, and he really communicated.
Well, I had heard that I think they did Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the first album at Wally Heider's. It was over 100 hours of studio time. He was all those guitar parts. He was not happy. They keep going back in and keep going back in, which was, at that time, you know, that was unheard of.
I mean,
for that kind of an album. I mean, yeah, true, the Beatles got to do Sgt. Pepper's and lived in the studio for a few months. But, you know, and that was like American groups. That's like, whoa.
Well, you know, there's a downside to that. Do you know Sid Page?
Mm-hmm.
Sid Page was a really great friend of mine who was in not only in Dan Hicks and the Hot List, but he was also in Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh, wow.
And he said that Sly would go in, you know, because he was a big Coke freak, and Sly would go into the studio at like midnight and come up with these incredible, incredible grooves, just wonderful, wonderful things. And then he'd go, I don't like it. And he'd tell the engineer to erase it and go over it. Now, today in digital, you wouldn't lose anything. By 6 in the morning, he had nothing. But all that stuff was lost because they just recorded over it.
Yeah, well, there were some guys that actually just kept putting other new tape on and left.
Yeah,
a lot of these outtakes that you're seeing on these reissues
and
stuff.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's
what's great.
You always leave. I mean, I did a session with Alex Acuna and Abe Laboriel, and they were warming up.
I loved them.
And it was the most brilliant thing you ever heard in your life. I wasn't able to keep it. The producer erased it.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, roll the tape.
Oh,
I told
my
the
God.
Engineer, he's like, roll the tape. And they're like, they're just grooving for about 5 minutes.
Oh, geez.
You know? And it's like, nah, we can't afford it. I'm like, oh, God.
Well, I used to ghostwrite for Lalo Schifrin. So, I mean, when I was in my, you know, early 30s and stuff, like in the 80s, and was that early 30s? I guess it was. But I would, like, be writing parts for Ernie Watts and writing parts for, for Abe and for Tommy Tedesco. And, you know, I mean, it was such a great way to learn how to write for great musicians, and I love writing for great musicians. I am so lucky to have been able to work with some
now,
of the best people.
Would they play exactly what you wrote, or did they kind of just make it
work? It depends. I mean, somebody like Ernie knew when to play the line and when to improv. You know, he had the taste.
Because I know a friend of mine had told me one time, a famous conductor, he wouldn't tell me who the name of him was, a composer, and he was getting upset because they were not playing the part right, and he had written something literally, it was for the strings,
right.
I think for the cello, and he couldn't play, it was out of range.
Well,
we can't play. But,
you know, that happens.
You know, in an orchestra situation, the politics alone in the studio.
Yes, yes.
But it's interesting because those guys, even if you just gave them like a little, just a little bit, like a chord chart and a few things, they would just make the magic.
Well, exactly. I mean, and they knew what to play. I mean, Tommy Tedesco did this. There's a great quote by him. I don't know if it's in a book or something like that, where he talks about how much he left out. You can't play everything, every note perfectly in a session, unless you're Grant Geisman. But there's, the trick is to know how much of it to put in that will make the music work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, because a lot of times a composer, especially a piano player, if they don't understand guitar, they'll write these big chords.
Yeah.
And it'll just sound like mud. So you just maybe play the top note or the top couple notes, and it sounds great because that's what a guitar would do.
Yeah, a lot of keyboardists don't
understand. So just knowing that, you know.
Oh, and the other thing that I, because I mentioned Lalo, I just have to do this. I lived with Hank Mancini's daughter for about 8 years, and I got to know him really well. And I don't think there's anything else that ever shaped my music more than that. I sang on a lot of his sessions. I have a conducting baton of his. I have his old click book. I don't know if you know what that is. But
yes, I have a click book.
You do? Okay, it says Henry Mancini on it. And he was a mentor, just one of the great human beings that taught me so much about not only music, but good food, good wine, and good cigars.
And he was incredible.
Yes, he was.
Some beautiful, beautiful music.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time. I'm wondering, well, I'm going to try. Can we play something quick that's like a couple of minutes? You want to play something really live, real fast?
Sure.
Play something really fast, and then I just want to go through what everybody's doing and make the announcement.
Let's do Keep Letting Go. I'll cut a verse out.
Okay. All right. Let's do something real quick.
This is the title song from the album.
The things that I've lost fill up all the rooms in my head. I'd have to move them outside the door. I have to leave all those failures behind, at least in so much as they live in my mind. There was that time my friend told me right from the start, buddy, I've got your best interests at heart. Then he went off and took the other guy. It's hard not to think of it, God knows I tried. But I keep letting go, I keep letting go. I let the bitter winds blow, just keep letting go. Oh,
We're out of time. I told you it would go by fast. Lori, I want to, first of all, thank you for introducing me, all
she's
these guys.
The one. Thank you so much.
And I heard you have a nickname, G-Ma. Is it G?
Yeah, I had to fit with the G-Force here.
Oh, there you go, exactly.
Grant, Jerry, G-Ma.
Quickly give the information on their
CD release concert and Gary's 65th birthday party. Everybody, write this down. It's going to be at ELCID, ELCID, which is in Hollywood, and the date is Friday, November 17th. Doors open at 7:30. The show is going to start at 8. They might be a little opener, and then they're doing the album. And
yeah.
Yes.
Gary, you could add in who's going to be there with you playing?
Well, Grant, M.B. Gordy, Steve Deutsch, and other people
hopefully,
are being added one by one.
I'm not going to say an hopefully. Oop. You told me I'm going to say
we
that.
Can say that we can say Dave Perlman's going to be there.
Okay.
They don't have to be.
Perlman. Now, when's the actual release date of the album?
We're
will
not
be
sure yet because Greg keeps remixing stuff.
But now we have time because we have till November.
It should be available to get
absolutely
at that point.
By the end of September for sure.
Yeah, so that should be good. And I just want to mention GaryStockdale.com for
yes
more information.
www.grantgeisman.com
for Grant. Grant, anything coming out, or you're overdue for another album?
I'm overdue, but I'm being lazy right now.
Okay, well, that's okay. But
resting on his laurels.
But we're going to nudge you. We're going to still nudge you. But I want to thank all you guys for coming on the show.
Steve Deutsch.
Thank you.
Steve
Deutsch.
Do you have a website?
I'm just building a new one now for a new project. I'll have
okay
it in a couple weeks.
Okay, let me know. I'll post it up on the website.
Great.
I'm going to take us out with the song called Be Cool, which perfect because these guys are just really cool anyway. And it's kind of a funk thing. And the I love the guitars and the bass on this.
That's just all me. Everything on there is me.
That's you.
Yeah.
Show off.
I'm just saying.
Show off.
I'm just saying.
You are just that's it.
That
but anyway,
the cheapest song on the album.
Everybody, have a great week. Thanks again,
thanks
Laura.
So
couldn't
much
have done this without
thank
you.
Us.
And
awesome.
Also, Doug and Rosalind helping me put
thank
this thing
and
together.
Rosalind.
And here's Be Cool. Check this out. I love the guitars on this. This is just a really great song.
Thank
everybody,
you.
We'll see you next week.
You can trust everyone. This is true. Trust them to do just what they're gonna do. When they're out there slandering your name all over town, break a sweat, don't let them get you down. Just be cool, just be cool, just be cool. That's what you gotta do, just be cool. That's the only golden rule. Bones, words do too. Sometimes you find those kinds of words come from you. Most of what seems malice is just stupidity. Just keep your head, like my friend said to me. Just be cool, just be cool, just be cool. That's what you gotta do, just be cool.